KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, pollock in Prince William Sound, humpies on the Yukon, young fishermen in Juneau, and have we seen the last of the blob, or is it just taking a breather? Stay tuned for all of that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Most people associate commercial fishing in Prince William Sound with summer salmon, but there are also winter fisheries for groundfish. As KCHU's Marsha Lynn tells us, the annual test fishery for pollock will occur before the new season begins later this month.
The pollock test fishery will give needed information, says Maria Wessel, Alaska Department of Fish and Game Assistant Area Manager for Prince William Sound Groundfish and Shellfish.
This year is a little different. We're running it ahead of the fishery instead of after the fishery. So we're optimistic that we're going to get some information about quality of fishing, what the catch per unit effort is looking like out there, what potential bycatch issues we might be looking at. So we're hopeful that running this test fishery ahead of time is going to inform our management so that we can feel a little more confident going into the actual commercial fishery.
The test fishery also generates revenue.
Processors will submit a bid, sort of a price per pound for pollock that they'll catch, that they'll pay to the state, and then they contract with a vessel to go out fishing.
Although the Sounds pollock fishery doesn't approach the magnitude of the massive Bering Sea pollock fishery, Wessel says it's all relative.
I guess you could consider it small in the grand scheme of things, but this year our guideline harvest level for that fishery is 13.1 million pounds, which is the highest it ever has been, our largest groundfish fishery in the Sound, actually.
With no processors online during the winter, boats come in from outside the Sound.
The majority of these vessels are homeported in Kodiak. Some of them come up from Oregon. The majority will transit back and forth between Kodiak for the fishery, so they'll deliver to Kodiak.
Wessel expects around 30 boats to take part this year. That's up by about 10 from the last 2 years. She says they're generally around 90 feet long.
They are big boats. So typically these vessels will harvest about 300,000 pounds of pollock in a single trip.
High volume is a good thing, considering that pollock prices are down, according to Wessel. She says Fish and Game set a minimum bid price from processors of 3 cents a pound. And the upcoming Prince William Sound pollock fishery isn't the only groundfish game in town.
So there is a parallel Pacific cod season right now for jig, longline, and pot gear. As soon as that closes, we'll open up state waters fisheries for those same gear types. And we do get folks participating in those in the wintertime. They either deliver to Seward or they'll deliver to the dock in Whittier.
The 2016 Prince William Sound commercial pollock fishery starts at noon on January 20th. In Valdez, I'm Marsha Lynn.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at AMSEA.org or 907-747-3287.
A proposal laying the groundwork for a pink salmon commercial fishery near the mouth of the Yukon is on the agenda of the Board of Fisheries meeting in Fairbanks. As KIYU's Tim Bodoni reports, the proposal would formalize a fishery that has been taking shape by accident over the past few years. But there are concerns about how it would affect the struggling Yukon king salmon population.
The proposal was submitted by Kwikpak Fisheries, the major fish buyer on the lower Yukon. It would allow the Department of Fish and Game to open commercial fishing with 4-inch mesh nets to target pink salmon at a time when fishermen are using other gear types to harvest the tail end of the summer chum run. Kwikpak Fisheries General Manager Jack Schulteis says that, until fairly recently, pink salmon have been largely a disposable fish on the Yukon.
Historically, there's never been a market for pinks on the lower Yukon or anywhere on the Yukon that I'm aware of. So what fishermen have been doing is just throwing them away.
Seeing the fish go to waste, Kwikpak started buying pinks in 2008, paying only a few cents per pound. Now Kwikpak is aiming to pay fishermen 20 to 25 cents per pound for Yukon pinks, which Schulteis says can command a higher price in the marketplace than a typical Alaska hatchery-raised pink. Kwikpuk is already selling substantial quantities of pink salmon, which are harvested incidentally in the summer chum salmon commercial openings in June and July. 20,000 pounds of pink salmon came out of the lower Yukon in 2014, a large portion of which went to Europe as fillets. Fish and Game does not have escapement goals for Yukon pink salmon or a detailed stock assessment, but a sonar at the Anvik River estimated about 1 million pinks going past it in 2014. About 60,000 pinks went up the Andreevsky River near St. Mary's that year as well. Yukon pink runs in odd number of years are much smaller. Fish and Game is neutral on the proposal to establish a directed pink salmon fishery. Fish and Game Yukon summer season manager Stephanie Schmidt says the department is taking a wait-and-see approach, but does not think that pink salmon fishing in the midsummer will harm the depleted stocks of Yukon king salmon very much.
Just a little bit of overlap with the king salmon run towards the tail end.
Support for the pink salmon proposal among the Fish and Game advisory committees is split along regional lines, with lower river committees in support and opposition coming from upriver committees who express concern that a pink fishery will result in more bycatch of king salmon. Reporting in Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The commercial fishing industry is a huge networked system of management panels, agencies, biologists, lawmakers, processors, and somewhere in that web, individual fishermen. The Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program recognizes that fishing is a complicated business to understand and a challenging one to enter. This year, the program is hosting its 6th annual Young Fishermen Summit in Juneau to introduce newbies to the industry. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
It's not your grandfather's fishing industry. Alaska is a player in the international seafood market. Many people who think about getting into the game have no clue about what's at stake other than just catching fish. Sonny Rice, with the Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program, says the Young Fishermen Summit is about everything but the water.
Not so much about how to go out and catch fish or repair your boat, but mostly about what is the market for Alaska seafood? Why do you see one price at the dock and get a different price in the store?
Finances are a big part of the summit, managing a small business and evaluating the costs of entering new fisheries. The summit takes place in late January in Juneau at the same time as a meeting of the International Pacific Halibut Commission. The IPHC, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the Pacific Salmon Commission, and the Alaska Board of Fisheries all spin the threads that determine the size and shape of fishing seasons in the state. Rice says it's important that young fishermen learn the ropes of talking to these government panels. They have a workshop on just this topic.
We do something called a mock board of fish. So we'll have some of our participants actually play people who are giving testimony, and some of our participants will play board members, and they'll practice giving a 3-minute testimony. We have the light system there so they can see what it's like to have it counting down how many seconds left you have to testify. And we'll teach them about, you know, how to best compress your message into that 3 minutes that you're given.
And it's not just the incredibly complicated politics of Alaska fishing. The scientific management strategy is also daunting for newcomers. Rice says the summit incorporates a number of sessions with fishery scientists and includes a trip to the Douglas Island pink and chum hatchery. So how old is too old for the Young Fisherman Summit? Rice says young doesn't necessarily refer to a participant's age.
The bulk of our audience is people who have maybe just bought in. So you're committed to commercial fishing as a career. Some of these things are new to you.
Now in its 6th year, the summit is beginning to include presentations from alums, some of the participants from the early years who've gotten a toehold in the business and who have gained a lot of practical experience. It's a great chance to network with some of the people who are already making decisions in the industry, she says. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The 6th Annual Young Fishermen Summit will be held in Juneau, the 27th through the 29th.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Is the blob taking a winter breather? Or, after 2 years, is the blob finally dead? The giant, persistent mass of warm ocean water in the Gulf of Alaska seems to have cooled over the last few months, possibly because of another warm ocean phenomena that is now dominating the Pacific. KTOO's Matt Miller tells us more from Juneau.
Measurements of Northeast Pacific sea surface temperature suggest that an unusual mass of warm water either diminished dramatically or even started dissipating during November.
It's an evolving system.
Nicholas Bond, a senior scientist at NOAA's Joint Institute for the Study of Atmosphere and Ocean at the University of Washington, identified the increasing sea surface temperatures starting in October of 2013. Bond was the one who coined the nickname "The Blob" in a monthly letter in his other role as Washington State climatologist. At its peak, the blob generated ocean surface temperatures that were 2 to 3 degrees Celsius above average. Now, temperatures are only half a degree to 1.5 degrees above average.
It has moderated to an extent, and whether it's gone or still there is kind of a matter of taste, but it is warm enough there relative to normal that it's probably having an impact on the weather, especially in places right along the coast.
Temperatures are still slightly above normal near shore, but far offshore in the middle of the Northeast Pacific, temperatures have significantly cooled to near normal in some areas. Cliff Moss claims the blob is dead. Moss is a professor of atmospheric sciences and one of Bond's colleagues at the University of Washington. He says persistent high pressure over the Northeast Pacific, earlier moderated winds near the ocean surface.
Which means there's less mixing in the upper ocean, which brings up less cold water from below.
But Moss says that high pressure hasn't been as persistent lately, and more cold water is now being stirred up from below.
It's really changed, and that's because of El Nino. The El Nino circulation works against the blob, and that's progressively happening now.
El Nino, which is associated with equatorial ocean warming, is going gangbusters. Bond believes the ocean is still retaining enough heat energy for the blob to persist for at least several more months, and it could actually be reinforced by El Nino near shore. Aside from affecting weather patterns and prompting precipitation changes, the higher sea surface temperatures may also be responsible for the recent appearance of unusual species in the Northeast Pacific, like sunfish and tuna. But Bond says those are anecdotal accounts of stragglers getting swept up north. What's more important is what's happening at the base of the food chain. He says there's still more warm water plankton than cold water plankton.
That's actually a big deal because those cold water species are bigger and have more fat in them, and so more calories for the small fish and the juvenile salmon and so forth that feed on them. And so that kind of transition that we've seen over the last year or so is kind of still going on, and it is having impacts on the whole marine food web.
Bond says juvenile salmon and seabirds may be doing poorly along the West Coast, while tuna could benefit from the increased temperatures. Scientists from a variety of fields will converge on Seattle in late January for another conference on recent changes and impacts of the blob. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had all sorts of assistance this week from KCHU's Marsha Lynn in Valdez, KIYU's Tim Bodoni in Galena, KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and KTOO's Matt Miller in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, wishing you a happy Russian New Year, I'm Jay Barrett.